now in retrospect, like, oh, you were just like in the process of like coming up with something that was going to change your life, but you didn't know what it was yet.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Today's conversation is with Katie Gotti, also known as Money with Katie. In this episode, you'll learn about how Katie has become a full-time creator and ultimately sold her company to Morning Brew. You'll learn about how she slowly developed and then launched the brand Money with Katie. You learn how she started creating content, how she started monetizing it and different products that she started creating, and then how she was thinking about evaluating, continuing to work on Money with Katie as a side hustle, the income she was making along the way, and then how she eventually sold her company to Morning Brew and why she's excited about that. You also learn about some personal finance tips and so much more. So as always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website, PortfolioCareerPodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced job opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Money with Katie.
Cool. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I got a question. I started the podcast in 2018, and I believe you may have been like writing online or like starting to write online. Maybe a little bit before then. Kind of curious, and partially because someone was talking to me this week of like, hey, I listened to your first episode. And I was like, wow, like that's crazy. Thank you so much for doing that. But also like it brought me back to that moment of like, oh, I remember when I started. So I think like, you know, kind of our first pieces online is always kind of an interesting thing. And I was just kind of curious as to how you got started writing online and what it was about then.
Yeah. So the first blog I ever had was just called katiegatti.com. And I started it in 2015 when I was in college, and it wasn't about money. It was just kind of musings, like anything that I thought was interesting, I would write about. So a lot of it had to do with stuff that was happening in my life or like people I was dating or trips I was going on, reflections about like graduating from college. It was all over the board, but what was really kind of, I think, kind of kismet or like serendipitous about that is that because there was no pressure, like I had no intention. I didn't even know you could monetize a blog at that point. Like there was no like financial angle, but it did teach me about kind of how to make a website and how to publish and some of those things that I think in today's day and age where monetization and like the financialization of content is so prevalent, and there's almost this pressure to have a monetized product if you're a content creator. I think a lot of those things probably would have held me back had I not known already, oh, it's really easy to make a website. And like, it's really easy to publish a blog once a week. And you know, this is how you distribute it. And I was like, just posting it on Facebook for my friends to see. It's wild. I don't use Facebook anymore, but 2015, I sure did. And so that was kind of how I got started. And I didn't publish on it with any degree of commitment or discipline. It was just whenever something struck me, I would write about it. So that was kind of the main difference really with Money with Katie, was like actually picking a content like niche that I wanted to talk about and committing to it. And then also committing to publishing a certain number of times per week and actually bringing in that level of like, oh, we're going to stick to a cadence and we're going to talk about these things and we're going to XYZ. But yeah, my starter blog in 2015 definitely did not have any of those attributes, but that's how I started. I'm very thankful that that blog is no longer out there because I'm sure it's pretty embarrassing, some of the stuff that I was posting about. Like if somebody was like, oh, I read your first blog post on katiegatti.com, I'd be like, please, like, I'm going to set myself on fire. Like, I don't want anyone to see that.
But you talked about kind of the stakes were low and, you know, just kind of building up a muscle and getting reps in and stuff like that, the benefits of that.
Yes, definitely.
And then you mentioned how it kind of eventually you picked a lane, a focus, and you started writing about money and not necessarily the official Money with Katie blog and brand, but more started writing about money 2017, 2018 kind of thing.
Yeah. So I would kind of dabble. It was like a section on the original blog. And yeah, I think it was around 2018. I went to a Refinery 29 Money Diaries book tour, weirdly enough, and it just like lit a fire under me. And that it was kind of that combined with this realization, like 6 months into working full time, that I didn't really have much to show for the fact that I'd been working full time. And that fear kind of setting in that like, oh, no one's going to do this for me. And like, if I don't understand what I'm doing with my money, like that's not going to, it's not just going to like magically come together, you know, like I have to do something. So I think writing about it just felt like it made sense to me at the time. And so anytime I'd learn something interesting or learn something where I felt compelled to share it, I would put something up about it, but it was certainly paled in comparison to like the level of research and the level of obsession that it eventually morphed into circa 2020 when Money with Katie came to be. And like, I kind of doubled down and committed to like, no, I actually think this is the thing I want to talk about. And like, I don't know why it's the thing. I don't know why I feel so strongly about this, but I do feel like this is the thing that I should be talking about.
Yeah. And then, so then I guess it was like kind of April-ish 2020. And then when you were, you know, were a fitness instructor and working in the office. And then when that was kind of taken away from you, kind of opened up new feelings, new ideas, new opportunities, new possibilities. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm so impressed that you've memorized my biography to this degree. So thank you for that. Exactly. Like there was a level of anxiety, I think, that came from all of that stuff stopping all at once. And I think everyone kind of like, that was like a collective experience, I think, where suddenly like your life as you know it is not really unfolding the way that you expected it to. And there were a lot of factors that played into that. It was like, oh, I was supposed to get promoted and I didn't. I had just bought a car and like, oh, well, the raise promotion cycle isn't happening now. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not good. Cause like, I kind of was like banking on that. There was that. There was, yeah, not teaching classes anymore. And really like leading up to that point though, pre-pandemic, it's funny. I will go back and read some of my old journals sometimes. And it's funny because it's almost like I could like sense that I was like on the precipice of something, which sounds really dramatic, but like I would write like, I just don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like I'm doing all of these things and I like all of them, but none of them feel like quite right. And I feel like I should be like doing something else that's like just mine. I kind of feel scattered. I feel all over the place. I was like, I just felt like I had my hands in so many different buckets and like none of them were wholly mine. None of them felt like completely the right fit. And so I think when it was like, all right, blank slate, calendars cleared, like you're home, calling into meetings, but like really not doing half the stuff that you're usually doing, it was just an opportunity to kind of be like, okay, well, now you have the chance to create something that is just yours. Here's a chance to define for yourself what you want that to be and like have a project that you can be proud of. And that is what Money with Katie kind of became, was like, I just want to have something that I'm proud of that I can like point to and really hang my hat on. And so that was kind of the reason why, rather than just like continuing to publish on the old site, I wanted to start fresh. I wanted to have like plant a clear, you know, stake in the ground. Like this is something different now. And I like ported over some of the content from like 2018, 2019 on the old site, just to have some like blog posts there. But I like really actually paid attention to like the design and the pictures and like things that I had kind of just whatevered on the old blog. That was like such a hodgepodge, but yeah, it is interesting to think back on that time. And like now in retrospect, like, oh, you were just like in the process of like coming up with something that was going to change your life, but you didn't know what it was yet. And so there was this almost like agitation or like frustration of trying to like get it out into the world, basically without really knowing what it was supposed to be, which sounds very woo woo, but
no,
it's kind of how I think about it now.
Yeah. It's almost, do you kind of see it as like, you can be planting seeds and making investments, and that's, an interesting word I've just picked there, but like you can be doing these things and then eventually like it can just flip over and the switch can like turn on, or like the, all these different things that you've been doing. And then like you get one new opportunity, or, you know, send one email or something like that. And then it just like clicks and you're like, oh, all of those prior things. And like, it's so frustrating in the moment, but then like eventually it hits and then you're like, oh yeah, like that's obvious.
So true. Yeah. Well, investing and planting seeds is such a good way to put it, because sometimes I think we look at, and I still do this, I like look at people who are so successful and you kind of forget that at one point they weren't, or like at one point they were just like you, like just like a quote unquote normal person. And I think it's easy to forget that typically people that are already, in, you know, that successful, it's not like it happened overnight or they made one choice that changed everything. It's usually like they were consistently putting in the effort. And if you are consistently putting in the effort day after day, week after week, year after year, it's like, that's going to culminate into something magical eventually. But to your point, you don't know like when the tipping point is. It's funny. I heard Lizzo talking about this in an interview because she now has those couple of very, very popular songs. And people were asking her, they're like, how does it feel to be an overnight success? And she was like, overnight success? I've been doing this since, like, I mean, I can't remember like the year, but it's like, she's been like a singer songwriter for 10 years. And it was just like one breakout song that, but she would have never gotten the breakout song had she not been doing it for that long. Right. It's like, she didn't just wake up one day and like come up with it. So I think that it's an important kind of reminder. And like, it's a good, I try to tell myself that just like, hey, be patient. Like, if you just keep showing up every day and putting in the work, like the outcome is going to come, but you can't be so laser focused on that outcome that you've kind of forget that like, hey, it's the consistency and hard work along the way that's going to like bring you there. And I don't know, sometimes I think we get really like hung up on doing the right thing or figuring out what the right thing was. I know I was super hung up on that, but ultimately it's like, there really are no like wrong moves, so to speak. It's like just picking some direction and starting and going usually will deliver you to the place where like you will then figure out what you're supposed to be doing. But I think that indecision keeps people stuck sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you took the right, you got the right word there. I couldn't get it, but tipping point, that was like a perfect articulation of that, like all these different things and then whoop, cascading effect.
Exactly.
And so then in that kind of fall, or then starting into like the fall of 2020 or so, Money with Katie started making money, a meaningful amount of money while you also were still working. So it wasn't just like a personal project. It was a side hustle that was like, or a business that was like making legitimate money. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Mm-hmm. Kind of like monetizing the side hustle, growing the side hustle while working and like, how you then maybe thought about, okay, I'm going to go full time into this if X happens.
Yeah. It's funny because I had a few different, like, well, if we get here, then I'll go full time. And then I was like, ah, well, now it's like, now we're here, but I don't feel like I'm ready yet. So like, let me like level this up a little bit. No, I think, it started in April. It actually didn't make any money until the following January. So all of 2020, it was not really monetized. Like, I guess it made a little bit of money at the end of 2020, but like less than $1,000. It was nothing like meaningful or anything where I would think like, oh, I could really like, you know, I could leave my full-time job. It's like, bitch, no, you cannot. Like, this is not that. But I think, let's see, it started to make money when I launched the Wealth Planner. And then that was kind of when the light bulb went off. And I was like, oh, like you can sell to an audience, like interesting, interesting realization here. And then I like got into sponsorships and things like that and kind of started expanding the different areas of revenue. And it wasn't really until like mid 2021 that I would say it was generating enough income consistently that I felt like, oh, this is like a business ass business. Because I remember it like fall 2020 before it had made any money. I was like, man, if I could generate $10,000 a month from Money with Katie, I would just be over the moon. I don't even know what I would do with myself. I would just like fall flat on my face with joy. And that started happening consistently probably in the middle of summer 2021. And I was like, oh, well, what if I could do 20? Okay, well, what if I could do 30,000? Like, it's like the bar just kept getting higher, you know? And I had started to seriously consider leaving my day job kind of at the end of 2021, because that was the point where it was like dwarfing my full-time income. But I was working at a tech company and like, I had a really good compensation package and I liked it. And it was kind of, it felt kind of like prestigious. And so there was this side of me that was like, who am I to leave a company like that to go do my own thing? Like, who do I think I am? But I'd kind of looked at it practically and thought, well, yeah, like it is kind of stupid to like leave a company like this that you probably, you know, it's a big deal to get to work here, like get a place like this. But but the ROI on my time for this job is pretty abysmal compared to the ROI on the time I'm spending on money with Katie, which was like a lot less time than I was spending on the job at that point. So I kind of decided, hey, June 2022, if I've made $25,000 a month for money with Katie for all of 2022 through June, then I'll quit. Like, then I'll do it full time. But then the Morning Brew partnership came about and they wanted to acquire money with Katie and like bring me on full time there. And so that kind of became like the perfect stepping stone because I was so nervous about leaving a full-time job and not having health insurance and like all of these things that are very practical concerns, but like definitely kind of excuses for me. That was a great stepping stone because it was like, all right, well, now I can have the consistency and like the mentorship and the network of like working at a company, but I get to do this full-time and I have some upside. And so it was just like, it felt like the good, like, middle ground solution to just like fully diving off the deep end and like trying to do it completely on my own. So I don't know that I'm as courageous as like a lot of other people that have like left good jobs to do stuff fully alone, but I'm just so risk averse that like I didn't want to regret anything. I didn't want to leave a company like that and then 6 months later be like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Like, why did I do that? And I'm sure I wouldn't have regretted it, but I tend to, you know, err on the side of like not taking as many risks maybe as others would.
Well, kind of, how do you, it's interesting, right? It's like all the stuff that you done now, like you said, you kind of found like a perfect partnership, right? Now you're just like, oh, okay. Like couldn't really anticipate this, but then now I'm basically doing what I would want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And get, you know, more resources, et cetera. And the security, I guess, to some extent too.
Definitely.
One thing that I think that you've done that I thought, you know, we talked about the wealth planner and stuff, but one thing that I think that you've done maybe a little bit earlier, I don't know exactly the dates, but this idea of kind of branded long form writing content. And I think you used to like kind of DM people and maybe when you didn't have as much of an audience. Can you talk to us about like how some of those kind of branded content or sponsorship deals happened? It could be a hack of yours or an arbitrage of yours or something like that. But it seemed like it was working and maybe still works really well for you. And maybe not many people take advantage of it as well.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's probably different by each type of like niche, but in personal finance, I noticed that a lot of the, I'll call them the old guard, like the creators that have been around for a long time pre-2020, the people that I was learning from who had been writing since like 2010, they all had blogs, but they did not really have a social presence in most cases, or they had podcasts, but not really a social presence. And then I noticed that a lot of the people that were my age that were kind of coming in and were new to the scene all had social presences, but they did not really have blogs or podcasts. And I was more interested in being a long form writer. And now I think about it as, even though I do the podcast, I write the episodes. So I'm really never just going in there and like riffing or just like chatting. It's always a 7-page script, if you will, that it's me writing it out as if it were a blog post and then delivering it. So I always wanted to do long form because I thought they just add so much nuance and you can really dig into things. And that is, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with Instagram and Twitter just because it's so ephemeral and so quick that it's like everyone is saying something, but no one's really saying anything on those platforms. It's like kind of full of bullshit on both ends of the spectrum. So I think in some ways, having an Instagram presence and a blog set me apart because that was kind of uncommon to like have an audience on Instagram, but to actually be driving that audience to somewhere where you had more fleshed out ideas. And so the way that I would reach out to sponsors was I would literally DM the sponsor. I would like find their Instagram account. And sometimes I'd have to DM them 3-4 times before anyone would answer from their social media team. But typically they'd answer and they'd give me the name of whoever handled influencer marketing. And then once I had that person's email address, I would reach out to them and I would say, hey, like my name's Katie. This is what I do. I have this many readers every week. I have this many followers. I love your product. I've been using it for X years. I'm going to write about it anyway. Or would you be interested in partnering and sponsoring it? And so that was kind of the approach that I took to begin with. And I also, it was always important to me that like anyone that was sponsoring my content was somebody that I would actually put my money with or like use myself, and that they weren't dictating what I was saying about their product. Like, I didn't want it to be like an ad for their product. I just was like, hey, it makes sense to weave it into this. Or like, hey, do you want to be the sponsor of educational content about your specific niche? Like with Fundrise, they do private real estate crowdsource, like crowdfunding basically. And I was like, I'm going to talk about alternative investments. Like, I think it's a good fit. So that was always kind of the approach that I took, because I was very nervous about damaging trust. And I think anytime you bring like paid anything into anything, your audience will question whether or not you actually believe it and buy into it and like mean what you're saying. And so that was a big thing for me personally. And I do think long form, I hope we never lose it. Like, I think that it makes sense that social media is so popular, but man, I'm like, the ability to like express yourself in writing or in a long, you know, a podcast episode that's you talking for 30 minutes. It's like such an art form. And I hope that we don't stop doing it. I hope we don't lose it with the kind of proliferation of all these platforms that are monetizing and capitalizing on the fact that people have such short attention spans. Cause I just think it's a great way to monetize because it's becoming less popular, but I think it's also just makes things way more interesting.
Totally. Totally. And the first deal or so with, I think it was with Betterment or so.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you didn't have like a big following then, right? Like obviously you're,
I think I had like less than 5,000 followers. So it was not a lot, but at the time I just remember thinking like, I don't know. Someone asked me the other day, they're like, how did you have the confidence to do that? And I was like, I think I was just too naive to realize it was weird. Like, I just didn't know it was weird to be like, oh, I have 4,500 followers and 4,000 readers. And do you want to pay me to write about your product? And they were like, okay. I was like, sweet. And to this day, it's been like the most lucrative partnership I've had. And it's also been very lucrative for them. Like, they've gotten a ton of, I don't know this for sure. So somebody that works at Betterment could be listening to this being like, that's wrong. But there was a point at which they told me like, you've brought more subscriptions than anybody we've worked with. So like, I think when it's right, it's right. And I think there was some of that going on in the beginning where it was just such a natural fit. It just made sense. And I think that that's kind of rather than like, if you're somebody that's trying to build sponsorship income on your product, I think like the spray and pray model is inferior to picking like and identifying two or three major sponsors that you think fit really, really well. And then just pursuing the crap out of them. It's my graceful ladylike approach.
That's Friday. All right. And so then on going back on that kind of side hustle thing there, seems like you were writing it and continuing to kind of grow the business while you were still working. Do you think that people with side hustles should start kind of, or personal projects should start LLCs? Like, do you see people have like businesses and then are employees? Like, I don't know. I'm seeing this a little bit, and I was kind of curious given, you know, kind of the personal finance expert here, kind of curious about like, should people look to like that kind of relationship of like, hey, I have this side thing.
Yeah. I think it depends. I mean, like, I guess I could look at it from a couple different angles. The first is like legitimization, and more so for yourself than for anybody else. Like, if you want to take something seriously, I think in a weird way, making it official legally kind of makes you approach it differently in some ways.
Yeah.
And maybe commit a little bit more because it costs. I used Stripe Atlas to incorporate, and it cost me like $500 at the time to get my LLC in the state of Delaware. I don't know why they use Delaware, but they do. Apparently that's some like tax hack. I don't know. Yeah. To incorporate in Delaware. This is also not financial advice. If you're in California, don't come for me because I think they have like very different rules. But yeah. So I think there's like the legitimacy angle. There's also the protection angle, which I think was more what I was interested in. My husband's an attorney, and he was like, listen, you're talking about money on the internet. You just want to be careful and you want to protect yourself so that no one can like come for your personal assets. If like something goes sideways, or, you know, it's a very litigious country that we live in. So I think in a lot of ways, it can just be a good risk mitigation play to incorporate as an LLC. That way, in case you have a particular customer or client or someone that wants to sue you for something, they can sue the business, but they can't really sue like your personal assets. So I think that's the other side of it. But I think there's a weird misconception that like having an LLC gives you tax benefits, and it does not. You can like use that EIN number, which is basically like your business's social security number, to apply for like business checking accounts and business credit cards and like solo 401ks and things of that nature. But it's not like you get tax breaks for having an LLC. On the contrary, it usually signals like, oh, you have self-employment income. You need to pay the 15.3% self-employment tax on that income on top of your federal and state liability, because you have the, you know, the FICA tax that you pay through your payroll employer at work that your employer is splitting with you. You are the employer and the employee with an LLC. So like you have to pay both. So I remember finding that out early on and being like, oh man, that's bullshit. Like I'm getting taxed more, not less. But it's really, I think it's just something that if you're even a little bit serious or curious about it, it's probably money well spent to just go ahead and like legally get yourself on the right track.
Yeah. And I've only recently learned about this, and you touched upon it a little bit, but like solo 401ks, that seems to be like a kind of another quiet or not as discussed kind of tax advantaged savings account.
Yeah. So those are great tools. There's a similar one called a SEP IRA that you may have heard of, or that listener may have heard of, but they effectively work very similarly. They basically have very high contribution limits. So in 2022, the limit for the SEP IRA and the solo 401k is $61,000, with the caveat that that has to represent, and I'm going to foul this up, but it has to represent less than, you know, the same as or less than, I think, 20% of your net business income. So if I make $100,000 for my business, and that's my net business income is $100K, I can put in $20,000, 20% of that into a SEP IRA. The solo 401k is interesting because it works a little bit like the employer one does, where you can put in $20,500 as the employee of yourself, no matter what your income was, as long as it was at least $20,500. And then you can match it yourself up to $61,000. And that's where the 20% rule comes into play. So I have several blog posts about these, but yeah, the self-employment retirement accounts are freaking amazing because they have huge limits. You can stock a lot of money in there, and the solo 401k can be traditional or Roth. So I like to do traditional because I like to defer the taxes and lower my tax bill, you know, in present year while I have high income. But if somebody was looking for a way to get more Roth dollars, you can do a Roth solo 401k. And even if you're above the income limit for a Roth IRA, you can use that. So there's just a lot of cool little, you know, hacks and tricks that you can do there. And yeah, a lot of people don't know about them. So I think it's a good one to be aware of if you've got 1099 self-employment income and you qualify for them.
Yeah. Any other hacks or tips or things you want to point out for, call it, freelancers or solopreneurs, you know, people that are making products on the internet and selling them, stuff like that?
That's a good question. I would say, let's see. Well, if we're talking financial specifically, I do think those two types of, I mean, you can really only have one or the other. Technically you could have both, but like the limit across both of them is the same. So you don't really get any benefit from having both. That's probably my biggest kind of hack. I guess the other would be probably, it's not really a hack, it's more of just like, just do this, is to hire a bookkeeper, like have a good CPA at the ready, because just not having to deal with your taxes as someone that has, you know, unique or variable income, unless you like doing your taxes. I like weirdly kind of like it. And so I didn't hire a CPA this year, even though it ended up being like a huge mess. I probably should have. But I think, yeah, having a good bookkeeper that can really keep things on track for you, I think they're worth the money, really. And I don't say that about many professional services. I think there's a lot of stuff that's kind of overblown and that, you know, you can get on YouTube for a few hours and figure it out and be fine and not really need it. But I do think that having a bookkeeper is probably the best tip I can offer there. Also, one thing that I invested in from a like contractor standpoint when I was still doing it on my own before Morning Brew was an email marketing guru. So I found somebody actually by pitching to my audience, like, hey, any email marketing people that are like really good that, you know, want to help me out. I hired someone who was so good that she told me what her rate was. And I was like, I'm going to pay you more than that because I don't want you to leave me. Like, I am so obsessed with you. If you're selling stuff on the internet, email marketing is like a non-negotiable. And for so long, I overlooked it because I was like, who cares? I have Instagram, all my followers on Instagram. I don't have an email list. I don't need an email list. No, like just as an example, I launched a product last year that when I just launched it on Instagram, it brought in like $3,000 and it was, man, I don't know, at that point, probably 20,000 followers that I was launching it to. And she set up an email marketing campaign, a sales campaign to an email list that had 800 people on it. And it generated like 40 grand in a single day. I was like, oh my God, I have been sleeping on this. So email marketing is like unmatched. I think investing in somebody that knows what they're doing, that can come in, set up the systems, set up all the, like, she, you know, Zapier and Flowdesk and your site and your payment processor, like someone that just kind of understands how all of it works and can just save you the time and the headache and just put it all together for you. Such a worthwhile investment. Like, probably the best thing that I did for Money with Katie was hiring her. So I think that'd be my other tip, is like, don't be afraid to outsource. I really avoided that for a long time, but it was so well worth it that I always tell people now, I'm like, oh, just do it. Just outsource the things, you know, you're not good at. Get an expert in there to help you.
And she been following your work. So like, she kind of knew you too, right?
Oh,
so
she knew it. Yeah. She's amazing. Yeah. She's the best.
All right. So we talked about growing the side hustle content, some personal finance stuff here. Is there anything else that you think that we missed, Katie, as you now kind of, you know, in, you know, with Morning Brew, kind of exploring now kind of like a portfolio of products and stuff and yeah, anything else kind of jump out to the person that's, you know, may have a job and is building on the side or is going all in on there? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I guess the only thing that I would add still is that I really believe that the reason this worked out for me the way it did was because, for whatever reason, I just liked doing it so much. Like, I liked that. I just liked the game, you know, like I like liked creating the content and like testing what worked and seeing what didn't work and seeing how much we could sell and like pitching sponsors and just like that constant juggling of priorities for whatever reason. I just really liked it. And I really liked the content. And I think sometimes we maybe overstate or place too much emphasis on like the systems or the processes or like this particular tactic. And I think, honestly, like a lot of the time, the secret is just really enjoying it. And so I think with side hustles in particular, where it's probably going to be the thing that you're doing on Saturday or after work on a Thursday when you're tired or like early in the morning on Monday before you go to work, if you don't enjoy it and like really enjoy it, you're probably not going to stick with it and it's probably not going to pan out. So I think that would be my one kind of like parting piece of advice there is, I don't think that what I was doing, or I don't think I had like any particular level of like really good time management or really strong discipline. I think it was just like, I just really liked it. And when you really like something, you don't mind spending a lot of time on it. And I think spending a lot of time on these things is what ends up making them successful. So I guess that's what I would leave you with.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. And where's the best place? I guess we mentioned Instagram, we mentioned Twitter, the website.
I would say definitely the best place to go, the place where we're focusing the most, like most of our effort right now, is actually the podcast. So if you like podcasts, you like this podcast, you want to learn more about money, you want to have fun conversations about money and psychology and all of those things, the Money with Katie show is probably the best place to find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you so much.
Hey, friend, thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.